Welcome to Through the Eyes of Women, a program featuring the lives and perspectives of women, local, national, and international. I'm Brenda Starr, one of the hosts of Through the Eyes of Women, and the show today is a reflection of the life and artistry of Ruth Mountain Grove. Ruth was born in 1926 and died peacefully on December 18th, 2016. There's so much to say about Ruth. She was a co-founder of Rootworks, Women's Land in Southern Oregon, publisher of Woman Spirit, a magazine of feminist spirituality, as well as Feminist Photographers, Ovulars, and Blatant Image, a magazine of feminist photography. Ruth was a lesbian, feminist poet, photographer, composer, publisher, musician, playwright, painter, and Woman's Land pioneer, and a founding mother of Through the Eyes of Women. Nancy Ryan, Sue Hilton, and Pat McCutcheon will be sharing stories and reading Ruth's poetry. I hope you will enjoy the show.
I'm Nancy Ryan, and I live in Taos, New Mexico, which seems like a very, very far away from where all of you are, and Ruth was. But I met Ruth in the early 80s in Arcata. I arrived there. I knew no one at all, and I was really terribly lonely, for women in particular. And I heard a woman's show on the radio on a Sunday, and I thought, oh, this could solve my problem. And I called up the next day, and I said, am I too old to be in the show? And the woman at the other end said, well, there's a woman by the name of Ruth Mountain Grove, and she's 10 years older than you. And she started to laugh. It was Sharon Fennell. And as a result of that, I went to the next meeting of the Women's Radio Collective, which aired every Sunday. They did a two-hour show. And being a part of that collective really changed my life. But if that changed my life, I was the only non-gay person in the collective at that point. My beloved Ruth is the person who really, really changed. I think I was ready, but maybe she knew it or she was there for it. And working with the collective and talking to Ruth and her passing books on to me, I began to read, whether it was Susan Griffin, all of the feminist books. And through Ruth, I became part of that movement. She even encouraged me when I wanted to do an interview with Susan Griffin, and we did a workshop, connected with the collective, and I did some interviews with Susan. And also I learned from the women who were in the collective. And I must say that Ruth was amazing in that she was very modest. She was very powerful, very determined, but she laid back. She never asserted us, put an idea forward very strong. She'd wait, she'd listen, and then she'd say. And apart from being a part of the collective, we became very close friends. And I remember we'd go to Clam Beach. She was a poet, I was a poet, and we loved to read poetry together. And we'd take my dog, Kimmy. And she'd say, Nancy, bring your French books, bring your Italian books. I knew I was in Italy and lived in Italy and France where my children were born. And she said, bring them so you can read to me. I need to be read to in other languages. So really, interestingly enough, I just thought of it. Hearing my poems read, and Ruth said hearing her poems read by other people, was one of the wonderful experiences we had on that beach. And the other thing that was wonderful about Ruth is that she introduced me to all sorts of things there, photography and I used to go to her painting studio, and we listened to music together. I remember she had a show that was coming up in the wonderful new library. It just opened. It had been open about a couple of years, I guess. And I met her there, and she had all these paintings. And she looked at me, and she said, okay, Nancy, what are we going to call this? And I said, what do you mean? Well, yeah, haven't you figured it out yet? And she said, no, look at this. And I said, well, you've been painting with light. Why don't you just call the show Painting with Light? So we made a sign, and she put up the show, and it was called Painting with Light. And actually, when I knew Ruth, she hadn't become taking as intensely the courses that she eventually took at Humboldt. She was a painting, and she was able to be out and around and a lot more active. And music was a big thing for her, and Mary Nesset was a very close friend. I knew her and admired them. I admired them both. And we used to go to things like Carmen Burana together and sit on the floor. And we became closer and closer. And when I say that we've known each other since then and that we knew each other intimately right up to her passing, that came from only 4 years of spending time every day together. And after those 4 years, my relationship with Ruth was pages and pages of handwritten letters and telephone calls up until the last 6 years of her life. And I mean 15-page handwritten letters that we wrote. And when I was off in places where there was nothing, no telephone or anything, I would make sure that a telephone went in somewhere. At one point, there was a bathroom made of masonry, and I said, "You got to put in a telephone here." And there was a telephone put in, and I put some pillows there, and I'd go up every two or three nights and call Ruth, and we would sit and talk as if we were visiting. We had, you know, I'd say, "Oh, I'm having my supper with you." You know, that's the way it started out, and it was that tone that kind of went on. I remember once I was standing, calling her under a telephone pole. I can't remember quite why, when there was a railroad track, and she'd say, "Where are you going?" And I said, "I'm not going anyplace. There's just a train going by. That's all." And I think that she kind of enjoyed my adventures out there, and I certainly learned from Ruth all the time. I was able to talk to her. I was alone, and I was able to talk to her about what I was listening to that was going on in the women's movement. Everything was happening. You know, that was the time with the Catholic Liberation Movement, too, and I'd been a part of that when I was there. And I missed it all, and she kept me up to date on that. And then I moved to New Mexico. And here in New Mexico, it became, in a way, first of all, I had access to more possibilities for communicating with her. But I live off the mesa, off-grid. So it's always been through, it was with letters for until about 5 or 6 years ago, and then I got my phone. And then we started talking as she grew older, I had to stay in more. We started talking like sometimes two hours in an evening from about 9:30 her time, from about 9:30 my time until 11:30 her time. And she always had her little black book, and she'd say, "This is what I did today. This is Ruth's day." And I would talk about everything that was going on here and those people that knew her. And then I became a radio host here of a show called Women Speak. And she never did really share. She would send me copies of all of her shows through the eyes of woman, which I loved. And then, but I would actually read her my introductions. I had what I called conversations. And I would become anxious and take a walk. And then I'd write it and I'd come back and I would read it to Ruth over the phone. And she'd make some suggestions or not. So again, she kept influencing my life. And sometimes when I'd be really low, it was Ruth who would say, "Well, you know that you can do this. You know you can do this." She didn't have much patience for that kind of thing. There'd just kind of be a long, long silence. She also, by the way, was a cat person like me. And she knew both my cats intimately. And they meowed to one another frequently. And she loved doing that. And I would meow to her. And from the time that I last saw Ruth, I only saw her once. And I saw her because we both figured out after about a month of trying how to use Skype. And I had never thought that I would be grateful for Skype, but sitting there in my chair and her sitting there and her showing me her room, the paintings on the walls and what was on her bed and what was on her little table, she took me all around the place, and we weren't very good at it. But by the end of it, we were just looking at each other with tears running down our face. You know, it was an amazing experience. I was able not just to hear this wonderful voice that I love, but I was able to see Ruth, and that was just amazing. And then my eyes began to go, and as my eyes began to go, we shared talking books. And she would get a talking book, and I would get a talking book, the same book I collected, Wallace Stevens or Maya Angelou. She would suggest them to me, and then we'd talk about them. And we read poems to one another. I sent her poems if I woke up in the morning. It's been really hard the last week. I just haven't been able to respond to my instincts. Oh, this is real. This would like this. So that was Skype. And that really was in the last year. And then in the last year, speaking was another. I thought to myself, she'll never stop teaching me. I will always continue to learn with Ruth. I spent 4 months in a living center up here after having a hip replaced. And I learned there, but I even more learned from Ruth how to let somebody talk who was losing their capacity to follow a thread of thought completely. But they knew precisely what they were saying, and they just needed more time. So in an age when nobody listens very deeply, Ruth and I continued to listen one another, to listen to one another. And I'm going to carry that with me, and I hope that I can remember that until the end of my life, during this last stage of my life that I'm going to. And Ruth is really my inspiration to that. And, you know, she never lost interest in anything. I mean, we talked about everything from politics to men, women, children, daughters. We shared all our stories from the very beginning. We both had children, and we both had troubled family relationships because of our children. And so it became more and more. I mean, she would call me sometimes at 1 a.m. if she was lonely. She would just say, "Are you there?" And I said, "Okay." And I'd say, "Yes." And then during the last year, when she was in and out of the ER and the hospice, I began to hear the names of some of these wonderful, wonderful women who helped her. Ruth was a very fortunate woman at the end of her life. And she would say, "Well, Mary came to read to me today." And she had to tell me every single visit she had, but I didn't know who most of the people were. And we talked more and more, and she would talk to me about her will. She'd get nervous. But I had been in the living center, so I did understand in the way. And she said blindly, she said, "Now I know what it was like there." And I said, "Yeah, well, you were one of the ones that helped me get through it there." At night, when I would hear moaning all over the living center, I would call Ruth and we would talk. And it would move me a lot, and I'd maybe get some sleep. And then at the end, just before you called, I put on a CD that Ruth sent me. It was an interview with Holly Meir. I believe it was the last that she did. And the first song that came in was Simply Love. And I just remembered that after she'd had her stroke, and she said to me, "Nancy, I can't collect my thoughts." I was at a friend's house reading poetry with the phone not far away. She was at hospice. And we got a telephone call saying that Standing Rock, they had been pulled back. And then the phone rang, and it was Marcia, and Ruth had asked her to call me. And I said, put the speaker to her, and I said, "Ruth, they pulled back at Standing Rock," and she just made the sound, you know, of joy and laughter. She was laughing. This is really toward the end. This is like 3 or 4 weeks before the end, although we thought it might have been that day. And then someone outside started singing Holly Meir's song, Simply Love. And it seemed as if Ruth were choreographing this whole thing. And the very last time I really heard Ruth's voice, except to say, "I love you, Nancy," was when I went through my messages, and there was a message from Marcia saying, "Ruth wants to talk to you." And I wasn't there. "Please call her." And then I heard, "Meow, meow, meow." And she was saying goodbye to my lioness, little lioness, Mocha. And wow, you know, that was really something. You know, she was an amazing woman, and she was determined. She was funny. She was witty. She knew what she wanted. She spoke her mind, and she was very, very tender underneath all of that. And I never heard her say anything about anybody else, you know, that was critical. She knew what she wanted. You know, she wanted separatism for women. And I know now she wants us all to go on. And if I'm really able at my age and in my condition to press on, it's because I have to for Ruth. We all have to for Ruth. She did so much, and she got us so far. And we need to go back and listen to some of the seminal women that began all of the second wave movement. And we need to listen to them, and we need to have them speak for themselves and speak for ourselves. I just want to thank the wonderful people that surrounded her, and I hope that maybe I'll have something like that at the end of my life. here's to our beloved Ruth and her singing and her voice and her music and her poetry. And I think she enlarged our community. That's the thing. She's enlarged and influenced both my life and all the communities she's touched.
My name is Pat McCutcheon, and my connection with Ruth Mountain Grove began indirectly. In my hands, I'm holding a Woman's Spirit journal from 1983. Ruth, in that journal that she co-edited with Jean Mountain Grove, published my very first poem. I was so excited. They published this journal while they were on women's land in Southern Oregon, and it meant a lot to the women readers. I'd like to read two poems from Ruth's book, For Those Who Cannot Sleep. It says, by Ruth Eichler, which was her married name, and that before she became Ruth Mountain Grove. The first poem is called Prologue. I write in the lonely early hours for those who cannot sleep when morning flowers. I write of a day I cannot know, except I wait. Will it be sun or rain or snow? I write of dawn, though still in night, while children lie curled in their dreams in white moon's light. Whether I can finish the work I've begun can only be told in the hour after the sun. And one more from that book. It's called The Struggle. Locked in my littleness in night, enclosed in self, I look for light. Cradling my dreams with jealous care, warm in the prison of myself, I share with that one who, looking for light, lifts up the ceiling of my room and floods my night. In cornered littleness, I curl, cringing, locked in my secret self, malingering, fingering my ingrown passions, mean and meaningless, shielding my small sins in my distress, opening this sense-bound thing, that other one holds it struggling and turns me toward the sun. My actual connection with Ruth was to come in 1994 when I joined a poetry critique group with her and Vinnie Peloso. And we've been bringing each other's poems and critiquing them and talking about poetry and having a great time with each other ever since then, just about every 2 weeks. I'll miss her being in part of that.
I'm Sue Hilton, and I knew of Ruth long before I met her because I'd been at least sometimes reading Woman's Spirit magazine, and, you know, she was sort of famous. And when she I must have met her when she first moved here, but I didn't have too much connection to her until we started publishing The L Word, which is a local lesbian newsletter, and she started writing book reviews. And I think she wrote a few other things. But and I was in, I don't know, I was in a book group with her. I was in a singing group with her. She was in the Raging Grannies for a little while. But I wasn't always the editor, but eventually I sort of became the editor by default. And I made a point of saying, I don't want to publish poetry because, you know, there's a lot of bad poetry out there. And I didn't want to have to tell people, I hate your poem and I don't publish it. So I just said, we're not publishing poetry. But somehow we ended up with all these poets on the L Word staff. You know, Barbara did Queer News and she was a poet, and Jacqueline wrote an article every month and she was a poet, and Ruth, of course, was a poet, and Judith Louise was a poet. We had this whole bunch of poets. I'm not a poet, but I like poetry. And so at one point, Barbara decided that the L Word needed to do a poetry collection. So I said, okay, fine. And since I'm, you know, since I was doing the layout for the newsletter, I sort of knew how to do layout. So I contacted all the poets and said, okay, let's make a book. Then I sort of started having more involvement with Ruth because I was working on the book. And we've actually done four volumes.
I have two I'd like to read.
Okay.
Now, there's this thing about Ruth. Well, I'll read this one first, and then I'll tell you. This is called As Women. It's from Voices from the Edge of the Continent, published by the L Word in spring of 2010. As Women. As women, we couple and uncouple. Who is there to care but us? I know it has been said many times, yes, but needs to be said again. We have no foundation, no floor to build on, no walls to house our celebrations, no unspoken assumptions. No one expects us to last. The water we swim in is poisoned. The air we breathe is noxious. This is how we are seen, as outcasts, as pariahs. Who cares if we survive? So then, the miracle is that sometimes we do, despite the hatred, our own and others, despite the lack of unquestioned assumptions. Aliens in a heterosexual land where nobody cares or cares too much, thinks they would be better off without us, but still we persist, coupling and uncoupling. Perhaps the miracle is that we exist at all. Now, Ruth has another poem in that book called Tasting a Woman, and this is a theme I will come back to often because Ruth had a way with an erotic poem. Tasting a Woman. When a woman has tasted a woman, she will never be the same. She may, for her own good reasons, return to men, but there will always be disappointment. He cannot be a woman. He cannot know who she is. Better she had never tasted that fruit. No wonder men fear such union.
I'm going to read this poem from the 2012 collection called I See Her. She tells me she is going downstairs to the kitchen, and I see her, like Duchamp, descending the staircase, all motion and languor, all falling lines on carpeted stairs, feet touching lightly as she flows down. In the kitchen, I see her preparing with motions economic, with a dance of grace, a meal that is a painting, with reds, whites, greens, orange. The brushes her hands, selecting, dicing, lifting glistening lettuce to white plates, placing orange salmon in a balanced composition, adding sliced red tomatoes, purple onions, white cucumbers, yellow-green avocados, blue cheese. Her hands a ballet, a pas de deux. Where two dances one, her motions do not waste. Centered, they create in this moment an alchemy that catches my breath. Her feet on the cold linoleum floor, her body bending. In 2015, I actually got together with Ruth and we put together a book of her poetry. So this is from I Remind Myself, which is a book of Ruth's poems that I sort of organized. There are a bunch of sections, but the middle section is called Medical Septet, and it's just a bunch of poems about doctors and being in the hospital and things like that. So this one is called Prelude. Turning my body to face him, he says, it's hot in here. Moving my arms, telling me to tell him if he's hurting me. Spreading jelly under my breast, touching my skin. We could be lovers, his head so close to mine. But he is cold. Stares at his machine. Clack, clack, clack. He photographs our intimacy. Winds a machine I cannot see. He knows my heart's secrets. He does not kiss me. He does not betray my heart. And this is 4 a.m. It's 4 a.m. outside the windows. Dark blue sky begins to lighten. The hospital awakes, ready for the day shift at 6. I am in my bed, singing the morning into the world, singing softly. Morning has broken like the first morning. Blackbird has spoken like the first bird. Two nurses stand transfixed in the doorway, the song so unexpected in this quiet hour. praise for the singing, praise for the morning.
One of the poems that was a favorite when she read was How to Wash a Silk Shirt. First, you put it on over your naked body. Then you step into the shower, adjust the temperature of the water, take soap, rub the silk on the arms, covering your arms, on the breasts, covering your breasts, on the back, covering your back. This last is tricky. For this, you invite another into the shower. Let her wash the back that covers your back. Rinse well the shirt still on your body. Turn off the shower, hanging the shirt on a hanger, dripping wet over the shower head to dry. Kiss the woman naked next to you. Soap her just as you did your silk shirt. Her arms, her breasts, her back. Turn on the shower, rinse well, turning her in your arms. Oh, one more. Strawberries. Come here, she called, the morning just begun. Come around to the back. Come look at the strawberries. As I rounded the corner, there she was, naked to the morning, to the strawberries, and to me. Come look, she said, pointing to the beds where rabbits had had breakfast and left a token of their appreciation. Come, look at what they've done. Naked in the dawning morning, the cool breezes playing gently around her, she came into my arms for warmth, kissed me, and scurried back to bed. Naked in the morning, burned into my memory, among the strawberries and the sunrise, her body memorized in my hands. Those are from the collection that Sue put together for Ruth called I Remind Myself. I'd like to end by reading some words that are not my own. They were written by Carlisle Douglas and appeared in the L Word for January. They just really express what I feel about Ruth, so I'm going to borrow them from Carlisle Douglas. In addition to the love and deep fondness I felt for Ruth, I am forever grateful for the ways in which she broke barriers and pioneered a lesbian feminist world that was waiting to embrace me as I came along behind her. Thank you, Ruth, for paving my path.
You've been listening to Through the Eyes of Women's Radio Memorial today, reflecting the life of Ruth Mountain Grove. We want to thank Nancy Ryan, Sue Hilton, and Pat McCutcheon for sharing Ruth's poetry and their stories. Through the Eyes of Women welcomes you to visit our permanent blog at khsuwomen.com, where you can learn more about Ruth, hear her singing, view photos and artwork, listen to the show again, and post listener comments. That's khsuwomen.com, where you can hear other shows about Ruth and all archive shows. Thanks to today's engineer and editor, Katie Whiteside, and to the entire Through the Eyes of Women team. Join us again next Monday at 1:30 right here on KHSU.